हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So, okay, so Kriya, so Deepika, continuing with the Upanayanam, right, probably calls reformatory rites of a Brahmana. On the morning of the Upanayanam ceremony, the Acharya should take bath, worship the Supreme Lord and the Vaishnavas, and then perform Sattvika Vritti Shraddha. He should then perform all Kusandika rites up to the end of Virupaksha, establishing the fire named Samudbhava. The child should be fed a little prasadam. He should be clean. So that's what the Acharya does. This is not done after that. Then this happens. It means the child now. Preparing the child. Child should be fed a little prasadam, should be clean shaven, rasika, bathed, decorated, dressed in one piece of clean silk or cotton cloth, right? So that means because the ceremony will go for a while and generally the kids are small, so then, you know, they should eat a little something, not a lot, just something so they won't get hungry. You know, nice, satisfying, but like that. Passing by the north side of the fire, the child should sit on the right-hand side of the Acharya facing east. So that means he's coming in from the left and goes around behind and then sits down on the right-hand side of the Acharya facing east. The Acharya should start by throwing ghee-soaked Uttara Pradesh length into the fire, right? The Kushandi, because it's already been done. Should perform Vyasta Samasta Mahavyarati Homa Burbu Viswa. Acharya Hotri should offer 5 oblations of ghee with the following mantras. First one, O Vishnu, Lord of scriptural rules, I request that you give mercy so I can perform this Upanayanam rite. By this, I may attain success. To remove illusion, I undertake this act of absolute truth. Right, so here you're bringing out the aspect how the Lord is the, you know, O Vishnu is the Lord of scriptural rules. Because all the rules and all that come from him. They're not just there. Because we have to understand this. The problem with smartas is not that they follow scriptural rules. The problem with smartas is they only see that the ritual is the potent factor. They don't really see that it's coming from the absolute and it's the eternal. It's coming from the eternal absolute position, though they may, by their consciousness, be applying it on the mundane platform. So it's not the ritual that's the problem. The problem is the smarta thinks the ritual. So many times the same people will say, oh, we're not fanatic. We don't get into all that. They're also very much ritualistic about their own social, political, economic standards. You know, they say, because I did that, because I go to work, that's why I eat. No, you're eating because that's your karma to get that to eat. What your work is producing your next food in the future, not now. I mean, you just practically look at it. People work. This week I'm working. I'm not being paid for this week until the end of the week. So that means why am I eating? Because of last week's work, not this week's work. So you can say, because I work at, no, because you work, you get food in the future. You're doing your duty. Therefore, you get facility. So it's again, it's also a smart, it's just an uneducated, non-scriptural smart, that's all. So the point is this thing to think that the mechanics itself is what produces. This is the illusion why the material living entity comes into the material world. Because he thinks that, okay, Krishna is doing all these things and he's enjoying, and I would like to enjoy like that. So therefore, I will follow the same mechanics that he does. But the point is no, his desire is being fulfilled. He has that desire, and it is fulfilled. And all the, you know, Lord Balaram, you know, then expanding, he takes care of the Kriya and expands his Vasudeva to take care of the Jnana Shaktis, and then all the mechanical elements work. But so then when we separate from Krishna, leave Krishna, then we think if I do all those things, I'll get the results. Now, the point is no, because we don't have the potency to do those. Krishna is providing the basis by which they're done. That's why Vishnu is the maintainer, because Vishnu provides the elements. You know, material world is built out of the 24 elements. Where do they come from? Not Brahma, not Shiva, not Indra. They all come from Krishna. So Vishnu, he's providing. So then he does, and then so he's just providing his own things that therefore he enjoys. Now, we're saying, I'll do the same activities, but you're not providing the facilities and the potencies and all that to get it done. We're still using Krishna's. It's not our own. You can say, oh, it's my house, but how do you get that? Where did the ingredients come from? You didn't provide the trees or the earth for the bricks or the cement or the steel and all. You didn't provide that. Nature provided. That means this came from Krishna. It's Krishna's potency that you can even build a house and live in a house and be protected in a house. Right? So that's the whole position, is that Krishna is performing these. So we're falsely thinking that I will do these mechanical activities separate. So that makes everybody sahajiyas. And they think because I feel like it and that and I'll enjoy and all that, it's about me, that's the sahajiyas. So that's the point, is material is always off the middle. It's never in the middle. The idea that, oh, in the material life will meet the balance in the middle. No, they never do it. It's just you make a workable between the sahajiya and the smarta on the mundane platform. The only balance, the only middle path is Krishna consciousness. No compromise. It's not that I'm compromising this or that, a liberal conservative, and getting a compromise and making a balance. That's a bogus idea. There's no such thing. You know, the best of both worlds. And there's no. In this world, there is no best. Best means Krishna. Spiritual world, best is Krishna. So that's the same best. So these kind of mentalities are inherent in the jiva because of Sat Chit Ananda. He wants to be happy. He thinks because I desire it, it should happen. Krishna desires that it's happened. So if I desire it, it'll happen. It doesn't, because we don't provide the potencies. Right? You know, 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, how much you're going to provide? You know, not enough for the whole body. So therefore, then the situations we're in, the ability that those can function, that's all coming from Krishna. Pandavji, you want to say something?
No, Maharaj, no, I'm okay.
Oh, okay. I guess it just some sound came, so the... Yeah. Green, the green square of distinguishment went to your picture.
I see. I'm just listening.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So these fundamental principles is you can see is that the whole material existence is actually an illusion. It exists, but how we view it and how we think it works, that's the illusion. Right? You know, that's the whole thing. It's just like Srila Prabhupada, who was a kid, he was talking about, you know, he was small, he was walking with his father, and he saw the tram going. And, you know, it has, yeah, the big car, and it goes down the track, and it has this thing on the roof that goes up and touches the wire. And then, you know, it moves. Because when they don't want to, you see, they turn it off and it goes down. And then they come back, they turn it on, it goes up, touches, and then they can move again. So Prabhupada had the idea, if he took a stick and then touched that, that he'd be able to go down the street also like that without having to walk or run or anything. He just moved down the street. So the wire exists, he exists, the sticks exist, that there is such a thing as movement exists, but his concept of how it works, that's not the real thing. Right? So Prabhupada's giving that example, is that the point is the material world exists, but because of it's not the one that is providing these things. How we think, how we're looking at it, it's illusion. And even if we're not the illusion, it's still temporary. So therefore, that's why we don't put so much importance on it. How much it takes to work to do service. How much effort creates the service. That's what we're doing. Other things, you know, it's like sometimes this, it's thought, oh, yes, you know, we do shod distribution because then we'll be recognized, you know, as good people. We're doing charity and all that. So then we'll be, you know, just like the other religious institutes or other philanthropic, and we'll have, you know, that position of respect and all these things. But no, that's not how it works. You perform your duty. We're distributing prasad because of the element of a devotional service. That distributing prasad is devotional service. People honoring prasad is devotional service. That way they get benefit by honoring prasad and move forward. Agyata Sukriti, they move forward in devotional life. And we move forward because we're trying to spread the mission and get as many people as possible involved in the devotional process. Then from that, if by doing that devotional service that Krishna wants, that people recognize and like that, then that's there. You know, it's just like, yeah. So that's the point. You do it because of the devotional element. You want to help. Yes, please.
Maharaj, I have a question. I spoke recently with one very famous ISKCON guru, and he mentioned that this idea that we have at the Agyata Sukriti works in this way that you just presented, and that's what is written in scripture, that it gradually accumulates. He quoted a verse from Gita, and I think the last verse from 17th chapter, where it says that everything done without faith in the Supreme is asat, and it doesn't have, it's basically is useless in this life or in the next. So his point was, yes, you distribute prasaram, you distribute books, but since people don't know actually what's going on, according to this verse, then it's useless in this life or in the next. So the whole idea of Agyata Sukriti accumulating is bogus, according to him.
But prasad is not Sukriti. Prasad right. is transcendental, so it's not controlled by that verse. It's that the person doesn't understand, so they only get Sukriti. You know, but the point is if that doesn't work, because Prabhupada said like this, if it doesn't work, how did he become a devotee? How does anybody become? Because who has the faith in the absolute of Krishna? Who has? That means no one anywhere would ever become a devotee. Because unless you're a devotee, you don't have faith in devotional service. So he has to be able to make the difference between what's transcendental and is controlled by that and what's not. Why would Krishna say that if he's making the whole thing about you do everything connected to him? And if someone doesn't understand it, that's the point, is that if it's just you're doing the activity, you don't see it in connection to Krishna, you get no benefit from it, because it's just it's a mechanical activity of the material world. Like that, it's Krishna's potency making it doing. So that's what Krishna's talking about. That's temporary. That's asat. It means you've done all your duties and family life perfectly, but you don't have faith in the absolute. It's all lost. Even though you get the pious Sukriti, it's still mundane. That's all you'll get. But the point is that's why Krishna sends the devotees, because the devotees are more merciful than Krishna. Right? This has also been discussed. Because Krishna, as you surrender, he reciprocates. You don't know him as the absolute, he doesn't reciprocate as the absolute. You simply know him as money, he reciprocates as money. It's all temporary. But for the devotee, because they see it in connection to the Lord, it's not mundane. What about the devotee? The devotee is doing that for their benefit because he knows it's transcendental. He's doing a transcendental activity. The other person takes part in it. So because they don't have that faith in the absolute truth, it doesn't come, they don't get the effect of pure bhakti. They get the effect of Agyata Sukriti. So the devotee is the thing that's in there. So if you only see the Lord and the living entity without the devotees.
Yeah, and also this
then
verse.
It's not a full understanding. And then what are the other verses before that explains that? You can't take one verse on its own without seeing the context of the other verses. It's the end of the chapter. That means the chapter is explaining something. What's that chapter explaining?
And also there was this verse where Krishna says that one should not disturb the ignorant.
Right.
But inducing them to stop their work, rather he should engage them in basically in devotion, in indirect devotional service in the Gyat Sukriti. So
yeah.
Otherwise, how this verse works also, which is
yeah.
Big contradiction.
Yeah. Yeah. The point is you have to see is that if you're dealing with a chinta beta beta tattva, that means on the inductive logical approach, it's always going to be contradictory. That's the point. Achinta beta beta tattva is not contradictory on the transcendental platform, the mundane platform. It will look contradictory. It never is. That's why the shastras are mentioning how things aren't contradictory. The acharyas never contradict each other. The scriptures don't contradict each other. There is no contradiction on the transcendental platform, because it's all reconciled in the absolute truth. But on the mundane platform, because it's one and different, people can't understand. How can it be one and different at the same time? So it's always going to be a contradiction. That's why you can't look at these things from a mundane or logical vision. So that's why going to university, getting fancy degrees, you know, doing all these things will not help you in devotional service. They can be engaged in devotional service. That's fine. You know, it's just like, we know the absolute truth. We don't need any degrees from them. But if by having degrees from them, they'll listen to us, okay. But who with the degrees is using it to make people listen about Krishna? Right? Very few. Like that. So that's why we have our own degrees. Because then, you know, they should know what we are and what we are. You know, if you're a doctor of divinity or, you know, theology or something like this, then they have to accept that's the area you know. If you're talking philosophy, they can't say that, well, their theory is more important than yours because it's not their field. So unless you're talking to a theologian, then you could say, okay, but they don't know the Vedic. They may know Christian, they may know Judaic or Islamic or, you know, just a comparative religion. Yes. VDPG.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So the point on what Pandava Prabhu was mentioning about is the misunderstanding is that bhakti being independent of karma and jnana, because in the preliminary stages of bhakti, then till the time one comes to the stage of nishtha, then karma and jnana are like inherently mixed in one's practice. So he always sees that because he is doing the endeavor, then only results come.
No, but the point is bhakti is independent despite being mixed. It's just like you have the parents independent, the child's not. The child's dependent. So the child doesn't want to get up. Does that mean the parent can't just pull off the covers and pick him up out of bed? They're independent. They can do that. A kid can do nothing. He can yell and scream and kick his feet and, you know, like that. But he's still getting up. So bhakti is independent despite our views on how mundanely things should logically work. Bhakti works anyway, despite us. Because guaranteed, whoever has said that, how did they take up devotional service? By the mercy of Prabhupada and the devotees. That's how. Every last one. Right? And so where's if you took birth in the material world because you're conditioned, you don't have faith in the Supreme Lord. Not to the point where bhakti is going to work on the platform that they're talking about to give you Shraddha. Because we're talking about Shraddha, that he's a person. Who's ever talked about him actually being a person that has a place in that? No one. Because even if they're Christian or Muslims or Jews, then yes, God's a person, but what does he look like? Oh, he has no form. Where does he stay? He has no place. Same time they're going to go to heaven and see him, he's going to be sitting in a big chair. So what kind of chair? What does he look like? No, they can't. No. So that's the whole thing. They don't have the knowledge. They have some basic knowledge that they're just touching on the platform of localized Paramatma. They've gone beyond the Brahman, that he's a person, but they don't know him as Bhagavan. But because there's the element of person, you can talk about Bhagavan, we can talk, but they don't have any information. So that means who has? On the mundane platform, the maximum they can understand is God's unlimited and God's all-knowing. That's it. That's the maximum they can have. That's all that's revealed.
That's fine.
So without bhakti, there's no question that they can get anywhere. So the point is, even if it's mixed, it's still bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's
the whole thing. That's what you were saying.
In that verse, when it says that it's all useless, it's mentioning about the aspects of karma and jnana through which we see. Oh,
they're useless. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then you're talking about the context.
Yeah, the context about that verse which is saying, the 17th or 16th chapter, the useless part is we trying to mix karma and jnana along with our practice of bhakti.
Okay, so then that actually then comes to Sarva Dharma Parityaja. You give up all these religions.
That's why next chapter.
Okay.
Next chapter, okay. Move in that direction.
Yeah, that makes very nice sense. Does that make sense, Pandava?
Yes, Maharaj, yes.
Okay, so he's giving that context, and he's talking about the part that's temporary. That's what's useless. You know?
Yeah,
it's just that because you can relate to it, you're using it. It's just like an example in logic, drishtantra. Is that you use an example the person can understand. It's not that the example itself is important. It's that they can understand through that. So they're attached to karma jnana. So through karma jnana, they can be engaged in bhakti, but it's not that their karma and jnana has any value. It still remains temporary, because otherwise people will say, because it's contacted there, therefore my karma jnana is also transcendental. No, it's not. It may give you a transcendental effect, just like iron and fire is still iron, but it acts like fire. So that's the simultaneous one and difference, is that even though it's iron, it's acting as fire, and even though it's fire, it's still iron. So if you want to try to elevate it when it shouldn't be, no, it's still iron. If you want to just say, oh, it's just iron because, like, you know, what the point was, is that it's not bhakti. It says, no, it acts like fire. Go ahead, pick it up. Say it's just iron. Go ahead, pick it up. So that's the thing, is both sides. Like you see Vishwanath and Baladev, you know, then they're pointing out, Baladev's pointing out, if it's just touching devotional service, you know, that's the iti part of the Anyavilasitashunyam, karma, you know, that iti is that it's connected, it's touching that, therefore it has that potency, and you, in whatever position you're in, can be elevated. And then on the other end of it, then if we think, yeah, you know, I'm the big devotee, then Vishwanath points out, until you get to prema, you're not a big anything. Prema, then you can say, now you're a devotee. Below prema, you're technically not a devotee. You're in touch with, you're associating with devotees, you're false, but you become a devotee at prema. That's for those who become proud. Otherwise, it's just encouraging, like Baladev points out. You know, so you have to see as both sides are there, thunderbolt and rose. So if one's humble, the rose is what you're using, but if you get out of hand, then the thunderbolt's there. You know, that's for the modern social thing, that, you know, no thunderbolt, you know, where they deem no thunderbolt, where they deem only thunderbolt. So they can't balance the two, depending on the mentality. Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
Okay. And Vidyapeet G, then you're okay? Good?
Yes, Maharaj, yes.
Okay. Okay. So here's Krishna is the Lord of scriptural rules. So therefore, he's the one that gives them. So following them, if you only see the karma aspect of the jnana, you'll get your elevation to heavenly planets or your liberation. But he's the Lord because they come from him. Right? And so therefore, if you're saying, well, he's only mode of goodness, and so therefore is temporary, then how can you get an eternal effect in that they're thinking by liberation of moksha from someone who they themselves are temporary, the rules are temporary? You can get an eternal platform of liberation because the Lord is eternally liberated. He is transcendental, and his scriptural rules are transcendental. How we approach them, that then they'll reciprocate accordingly because they're coming from him, they work like him. So he says, I request you give me mercy because we can't do anything on our own, so I can perform this upanayana rite, right? You know, so the rite means this, okay, you can go through the ritual. One, it goes through smoothly and everything gets done nicely, but also the element that we would be able to be committed to this because the rite is there for committing to the training of the student to bring them to the platform of understanding Brahman. That's the whole point. By this, may I attain success. By him as a teacher teaching someone else, and he'll become success, just like the teacher, by teaching, becomes successful, and the student, by learning, becomes successful. You know, by hearing, by Shukadev Goswami, by speaking, became successful, and Prakrit Maharaj, by hearing, became successful. Right? To remove illusion, I undertake this act of absolute truth, right? So the illusion of just the material position and what it is. So by always being absorbed in hearing, chanting, and glorifying Krishna, then whether you're speaking or hearing, then one removes illusion, right? So that means he's removing any illusion in himself by him speaking or training, and the student is being removed illusion by them following and learning. So, okay? Yeah. We'll see this verse come up again, but in a slightly different twist in the next, when they graduate. So in other words, these five are also said when they graduate, right? In other words, it's been completed. So this is the starting it, that will be the end of it. Someone remains a Naistika Brahmachari, then one just continues on that. There's no end to it. So then the next verse of the verse is the scriptural rules. I request that you give mercy so I can perform this upanayana rite. By this I may attain success. To remove illusion, I undertake this act of absolute truth. So now that's to Achyuta. Vishnu, he's the Lord of that. He's the maintainer. Achyuta, he's the, the infallible, you know, one. Then the next verse is to Narayana, same points. Same verse, just the name is different. And so then to Narayana. Then he is the maintainer of all the living entities so that one can be maintained, you know, to follow those rules. Then Ananta, then he's always supporting and being able to engage these secondary aspects because he takes charge of these elements of Kriya and Jnana. And so then on that basis, then he, you know, everything is being held up. And then Sankarsana, one has the knowledge and all that of this so one can apply it properly. So after these five offerings, the acharya should then stand facing east on the west side of the fire with his hands folded in prayer upon a kusasana with the tips facing north. Right, because you're always you're facing east, and so then the kusa grass is always going to be perpendicular to the direction you're facing. Now, we have these asanas where the tips have been cut off, so we're not going to see them. But if you're making an asana out of ones that are fresh, you have the tips and you have the roots. So then the tips face one way, the roots the other. The child should stand facing the acharya between the fire and the acharya upon kusasana with tips facing north. The brahmana should stand on the child's right hand side and give a handful of water first to the child, then to the acharya. So they stand with their hands cupped. You want to, you get, you know, the right on top of the left and close it nicely, you know, so that, then it will actually hold water. Right? The acharya should look at the child and say, O Lord, we have met with this boy who has come for Upanayanam and testified to his character. Please bestow your company to this splendid youth. Let us go without obstacles to the supreme goal of life. May the boy attain the ultimate goal, right? So basically he's saying here is that he's taking the responsibility, one, to, you know, as we saw before, to train, and that, you know, things will go forward, but to testify to the character. So it's not that just someone turns a particular age, or because, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, our kid had Upanayanam? No, you have, the point is that they have to have the character to perform the brahminical activities. They're not expert. They're just learning, but they still have the potential that their mentality is there, that it's actually, you know, you're dealing with something that will do. But if they don't care for it, they're always playing, they don't pay attention, they don't like to do, they shouldn't be getting Upanayanam. It's not a social prestige, this. You know, it may be respected, but it's being done because of the duty, because of the character. Yes.
All right.
Huh.
So there are two ways, or I mean, after doing Upanayanam, one method which is standard followed is, once somebody gets Upanayanam, he just stays in the Guru's ashram and doesn't go home for at least some time, as it's mentioned in Mahabharata about, you know, you have to stay four levels. One is the Naistika, who just stays there, doesn't go. And another one takes a vow of completing the studies. And another one takes a vow of at least like this many years, 4 years or 8 years, something like that. And the other one at least for 1 year or 6 months, something. So this is one, you know, the standard way of, after getting Upanayana, he stays with the Guru. That's why he could like take that full responsibility. But another thing is those who are as a day scholar.
Yes. But then the point is the toll. You're coming in the morning and doing all the yajnas and everything like that, and then going in the evening after those have been done. So the only thing is you're going home, maybe eating something, you're going to sleep, getting up in the morning, taking your bath. But all your actually activities are being done at the ashram. So that's why before we saw when we had our day students, they were there for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but with time, because parents want this, that, and so again, it adjusts. But the point is there should be the time to do practical service, practical, all these things. He's not just coming only for class. He has to be coming for service also. So if you start to reduce where they don't really do much service, you know, just a little bit, or, you know, just a token kind of thing like that, then better than not call it a gurukul. You know, then it's some kind of educational program. Find some nice name for it, but don't call it a gurukula, because gurukula means the place of the guru. Who's the guru? Who's the one training? Who's the one taking this responsibility? That's the point, because if someone's not taking this responsibility, it's not a gurukula. You know, it's just a school, and that's, you come there, and, you know, maybe someone's this and that, but are they taking it? Like the teacher at the school, a karmi school, like that, you know, they're there, and someone may say, yeah, no, he's good, he could do this position, he could become, you know, president of the student body, or, you know, take up this or that, but are they going to take their karma if it goes wrong? No, but whoever does this Upanayanam right, they get the karma. Like it or not, that's the way it works. It's not a joke. None of these things are jokes. They're real. So therefore, that's called a toll, right? So that's why we had one of the schools was a toll for those who, it wasn't the one where they just come and just you're seeing how they do, but after the 6 months when it's okay and they're accepted, then they join the toll, right? If they're not in the ashram, then when they join the ashram, then they're part of, you know, that aspect. Then they're part of it. Like, so they had the different levels to accommodate. But, you know, it's not understood, these things. It's hard enough to get people to just, you know, that they appreciate that there is such an education and you won't die if you go through it.
Yeah. So Maharaj, it appears to me that this difference of somebody starting at 8 and you know, other scriptural injunctions mentioning you can start at 5. So because in between 5 to 8, the child still is little what you call docile, he still needs that homely association with parents little bit, because he cannot just move to the ashram and stay at such early age. So the idea is, because the Brahmins, they take the responsibility, so he can actually start with the toll and continue. Whereas for Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it's too, the home environment is too, you know,
important,
or it's a kind of like very intense where the study actually don't happen. So for them, 8 you start and just go to the ashram of the teacher and just stay there. That's why then you start a bit later. And for Brahmins, you can give this, leave this gap that they can start at 5, and because the home environment matches with the environment of the ashram, they can actually go little before.
Okay, yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say, I mean, you could say in a general way, you could take it as like what you were talking about there. Of those four, I think those four are, you've come to the Gurukul, let's say the boy joins at 12, right? And then at 16, generally they would graduate, whatever. The whole idea is, in general, the earliest, you know, they would graduate would be 12. I mean, 16. So if he comes at 5, stays to 16, he comes at 8, stays to 16, he comes at 11, stays to 16, comes at 12, stays to 16. So whatever it is, you come at 12 to 16, that means you have 4 years as your study, 4 years as your vrata of ashram. So now if he, let's say he finishes the study in 3 years, right? Now he might want to leave. Right, because he says, what am I going to do for the next year? So he's finished his study, but not his vrata. Or let's say in 4 years, he's finished his vrata 4 years, but he wasn't that smart. So he only finished, you know, 3/4 of the study. So that means he graduates having finished his vrata, but not his study. So the one means he's smart, but he doesn't have as strong a character as could be. The other one has a stronger character, but is not as smart. And then you have the one that doesn't finish either. So then he's, you know, not his character and his intelligence is weak. But one who finishes both, then that's considered, they're the most intelligent and most have the best character. So it's more of an element of the character and how much they know. Like that, though you could probably, like you say, apply it to get that kind of an element, that the later they come, then the less of the bretta and less they're going to study. You know, so it would have an application like that, but I think it's a different measurement more on what do they know and what's the character in line with what they know. Because you see some, I mean, we've had kids that were super intelligent, but their character was really weak. And we've had other kids that had practically no brain at all, but their character was so strong. So we've had, you know, examples like that. And then you have the guys that are just blasé and they don't do good anywhere. And then those, that very few who do good everywhere. You know, it's like, I think in the modern, I don't know, at least in the American, they have kind of a thing, I'm not sure the term for it, but they have the, I think they're part of varsity or something like that. It means that they have the academics and they have the sports. So you have guys that are good in sports but not academics, and guys that are good in academics and not sports. Guys that, of course, they're not good in either. But then you have the rare guys who are good in both. He's the quarterback, but he's also the top, one of the top guys in the school in grades. And so they get a special recognition, special coach, special everything. So they're recognized. So it's not as much on the character, you know, because the point is to play the sports, you have to put in the practice, you have to do that. There has to be teamwork. There has to be. So there is some indication of some character, but it's not necessarily religious, you know, a devotional or a spiritual or that kind of thing character, but you know, it just shows something. So there is kind of, even in the modern, a little bit of recognition of this in your old traditional kind of forms. Nowadays, who knows what they care about? You know. Does that make sense? So it will have some indication. You could see is that someone comes later, then there's something's not going to finish. You know, so it's going to be weaker. But I think the measurement is specifically what they're planning. You know, it's just like Prabhupada says, 5 to 25. So that's 20 years. So you study what you can in that, and you know, so it's how much you could. Technically, if they went 5 to 25, they could, everything's there, the teacher's there, they could study through Bhakti Sarvabhauma. You know? But, you know, some will get to Bhakti Vedanta, some will get to, you know, like this. And you see most of the kids, very few could stay past the 22. Mm-hmm. You know, because 22, then I think sun matures, and then they think that they're, you know, God's gift to the world and know everything, and they go out and then they just spin their wheels for 3 years because they still have to get experience, which they could have done in the Gurukul, left at 25 and gone out and immediately gotten into something more solid. You know, but even they're spinning their wheels, they're generally doing much better than anybody else. So no one ever notices. Like that. And then you have kids that, you know, when they turn, we had before, kids turn 16, they want to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we didn't give them leave, they'd just disappear. And then you'd find out, you know, next year when you went for a program somewhere that they left, you know, went to this temple or that temple or things like that. You know, 18 was very, very common. You know, somebody leave there 18 or 19, if they're not quite so sure. But, you know, somewhere like 17 to 19, they leave. Then the ones that stay past that generally make it through till you know, 21, 22, more 22, like that. But then the next one is if they can make the 25, that means they have to think, they still have to be humble. You know, that was a thing in the Jesuit teaching training. Is that they would do 2 years of menial service, just service all day in the monastery, cleaning and stuff like that. Then after that, you know, they would seriously study all their theology and everything, so they knew it perfectly. Then they would go out and get a karmi degree, a PhD in whatever area, you know, they felt would be useful for them. Then when they finished that, they came back to the monastery again and did 2 more years of menial service. Having done those 2 years, then you know that that humility is there because, you know, they know all the theology. They know they have a PhD, but they're still, you know, willing and able to do that menial service. Then after that, then they go out and preach. And then you see those Jesuits that go out, they could convert countries. You know, they were, you know, so their character, their knowledge, everything was so strong. So, you know, that was Prabhupada's idea. They go to 25. That's when the body matures anyway. So if you want to get married, that's more of an ideal time and all that. And so then, you know, and you're learned and this and that. And so then you could do further study yourself, but it doesn't have to be supervised. But up to that time, if it's supervised, you'll get a lot more out of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you see, is those boys who did stay beyond 22, then their character and their abilities are also very, very special. So that's, so in one sense, indirectly, you know, or it does have an application that you can say it applies to those, but some people may come later and apply themselves and get through everything. So it's a matter of what you're planning to do. So as it is now, no one's taking a breath to how long they're going to stay. We never implement it because you never know, like that, you know, or how far they wanted to study, because it's not established enough that people know that, oh, this is what it is, I want to study this, because we still have, you know, that adult educational thing is the part that we're still, you know, developing. So when all the courses are all fixed, all the Upachetan Upanayanam courses are there, all the Upadhyaya courses are there, you know, all those things are fixed and, you know, what it is, then they can say, I want to do this, this, this. And so then we'll say, this is the course of study. It'll take you this much time. And then, you know, like that, you work it out. Is that okay? Or?
Yes, Maharaj. But that aspect of the Shastric injunction mentioning that you take later for Vaishyas, the Upanayana, I mean, it's more about committing to that serious study or scriptural dependence.
Yeah.
Because the family and the whole scene is not ready. Only for Brahmins, then the earlier the better.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yes. Well, you have the thing, as Manu will mention, that there's two ways to approach when you go to Gurukul. One is if you're interested in the spiritual, learning the spiritual and developing the spiritual kind of mentality and focus, and learning, you know, whatever it is you would learn, you know, for a practical life. Then the second is you're not worried about the spiritual, you just want to get the pious aspects. In other words, you come earlier, you do the spiritual and the pious, and or you just come for the pious. So in that way, then, if you're only interested in these, if you're interested in the spiritual, a Brahmin comes at 5. And if he's only interested in the into the pious elements, he comes at 8. A Kshatriya, if he's interested in the spiritual, he comes at 6. And if he's only interested in the material, then he comes at 11. And the Vaishya, if he's interested in the spiritual, he comes at 8. And if not, then he comes at 12. So that's what will distinguish those ages there, on what do they want to get from the education. Are they coming for the spiritual and all the different nice things they'll learn, or are they only just coming for all the, you know, elements, how they'll fit into the Varnashram system? Do they want to know Varnashram and what's beyond, or they're only coming for the Varnashram?
Because this guideline actually is very important in how to design your curriculum for different children.
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, you make one thing at the age of 5, get people from all natures, all backgrounds, and try to give everything to them at together, it somehow, you know,
yes,
we have problems.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's why you see is that the kids come, but they don't get Upanayana until they're ready. So some kids might get at 8, but some kids might get at 10, 12, some 14, some 16.
Yes.
So, yeah, you have to have that kind of leeway. It's not automatic when they're this age they get. No, everyone else is getting, he should also get. No, unless he has the character, no, he shouldn't get. Yeah, so yes, these things are there. So like you said, because what's the difference in the education? It means learning your English, your math, your general knowledge, and all those things don't change, whatever the age you come at. You know, or whether you have Upanayanam or not. What changes is when you're allowed to actually study the Vedic mantras and to use it in the yajnas and in the puja. That's the whole point. Until you take Upanayanam, you can't learn the Vedic mantras. You can't use them, you know, in the sacrifice or on the altar. You can't do those things. That's what changes. But the general education, just like the day school stuff, that stays the same. So that's why you have to have a schedule that will accommodate day school, but then accommodate if they actually do take Upanayana. So that's why our schedules were so technical on how to work everything in, get all the things in there. But the, you know, it works nice if the idea is the, you know, the standard is they just live in the ashram, and then, you know, and, you know, for those who, whatever reason, then there needs to be a day school, then it gets as close as possible. But as soon as you take it that, well, the modern education, that's pretty standard, but we just want to add a few, you know, Vaishnava or devotional elements or Vedic elements to modern education, that's then where these two don't get along. Because the one is just geared at, I'm going to get a karmic job, get the degree and get the karmic job. And the other one is at, you know, it's about devotional service. And you have that, everything else will come. Because we had kids in the school that, you know, stayed full time and all that. And they left whenever they did. You know, one left because of visa, probably otherwise never would have left. And someone else left when everybody else, all his compatriots all left. I think they probably were all in their, either late teens, early 20s. But, you know, they all stayed because one boy was there that they all, you know, kind of rallied around. And when he got older, because he was probably the oldest, when he moved out, then they all moved. And so then, two of them that I know of I'm not sure how far they got in their education. One did a PhD. The other one, I'm not sure. I think he did a PhD. But that was because their qualification and character and study ethic, they could go out, go to the university and get in and then work their way up. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, because especially if you go to the Gurukul and get out at 25, then if you went to a university, you would be a mature student. See, if you're trying to get into the university when you're 18, 19 years old, then if you don't have top marks, you don't get in. So unless you're in that top, whatever it is, 5% or something, you don't get in. But if you're a mature student, then just because they know you want to be there, you get in anyway. So you don't have to have the top grades to get in. You just have to be able to have a high school equivalency, that's all. You know, but very few people understand these elements, you know. So, but like you said, you have to consider all these. So when you consider this, and each kid has its own nature, because it's also that we're not just having one kind of kid. Most schools, except for state schools, they deal with everybody, and then you run at the lowest common denominator. But if you're dealing with private schools, they cater to a particular class of student. And so then it's easy to run the school, easy sketch. But we're dealing with a wide range of devotional commitment and a wide range of natures themselves. So the ashram, kind of commitment's very wide, and the varna is very wide. And then, you know, day schools, this and that. So you could probably say that we have the most complex concept of education that there is anywhere on the planet. No one deals with this wide, and you're trying to deal with all the 14 books and take them up to their fullest thing, but at the same time get a solid thing in the modern education, at least up to the 12th standard, and at the same time as accommodate kids that wouldn't get into private schools. They just wouldn't. But at the same time, they're in a private school. You know, and trying to have facilities for those who are exceptional that they can function. That's why I said, oh, we have the, you know, the tutorial kind of study. But it may be out of 100 kids, only 10 are in it or 5 are in it. It's not that every kid has to move into it. And so they move into it because they have the character. But if you don't have it, what do you do for them? That's the problem with state schools and most schools anyway. Is if you're above whatever it is they're shooting for, they don't have anything for you to do. So that's the idea. You can handle that. You do it. You can't. You don't. It doesn't matter your age. So somebody might be 12 or 14, they move into tutorial, while someone else might be 18 or 20 before they move into tutorial. It doesn't matter. Whenever they're ready, they move in. Whenever they're ready for Upanayanam, they get it. But then those tracks are there. So to be able to run all that together and everything, it makes it difficult. But, you know, you work it out and it functions. But you have to have people who know it. So that's the whole point, is you learn how, understand how all that holds together. Therefore, you move this, how it affects the whole thing. So someone who knows this subject and can teach, then that's good. They can function at that Upadhyaya platform. Someone who understands, you know, and who understands the topic well and understands how it fits into how everything else is there, kind of its relationship, okay. But the one who understands how that's the Maha Upadhyaya. But the one who understands how all of that fits together and how you adjust one thing, how it affects, how it goes down the whole line. In other words, you know, you catch the, butterfly, and then there's a tsunami in Japan, that guy, that's the Maha Mahopadhyaya. So that's the thing, is how well that's understood. And so whoever's working in the school now, basically you're not hardly even dealing with Maha Upadhyayas. So they won't be able to hold together a Gurukul education along with the modern education. They can't do it. They don't have the qualification. They may be great teachers, great people, great managers, great whatever it is, but they don't understand education and how education works and how the psychology of the children, how that works. They're lacking that.
Yeah, so the whole principle is a Gurukul education is determined by that aspect of what the Upanayan Sanskar is telling about. The guru taking full responsibility and the disciple yes. coming with full determination.
Yes, yes, exactly. So that's why the whenever they come in, if they're coming in at 5, your whole training is to try to get them to the Upanayana. You know, yes. and to gain that character, it will also help in their other academics and their other things like that. But as soon as you start taking away all the service and all those kind of things like that and the character, you know, elements and discipline, then you lose that and they won't be qualified. So they might externally put them through it, but do they have the actual character? You know, it's just like in the modern, a Brahmin family will have their kid do Upanayanam when he gets 12. Like nowadays, everybody just at 12 gets, you know, some might do it a little earlier, but they're going for those later kind of things. You know, it should be 8 for a Brahmin, but, you know, because 12 is the latest there for the Vaishya. I mean, earliest for the, what is it? Yeah, kind of the, yeah, the latest for when they join like that. So then the Vaishya, so then they take that and then, you know, they'll be brahmachari for the day. You know, he'll wear his peg shoes and wear a dhoti and all that and, you know, do all the different things and maybe do some begging or whatever it is. So he'll be brahmachari for a day. And more strict families, maybe 3 days. And then some, it may be just for the time they're doing the ceremony. It's not even for the day. You know, it's just for, you know, they start whenever they start and end whenever they end. And then, you know, during that time, he's a brahmachari. You know, it's like, so, you know. So like that, and then they can, they'll weld a thread and then they can say that, yes, you know, I did my brahmacharya and all that. But, you know, it's not exactly like what you mentioned, at least a year, you know. But from what I've seen is to give you 1 year, you know, you kind of adjust. But in the first year, you adjust to the form that's there, but not necessarily the mentality. 2 years, then they adjust to, you know, they become quite solid in the form, but they adjust to the mentality that they're part of the scene. And if they do 4 years, then you see that they actually, having adjusted, they actually progress something. They get some solid progression there. So that's why you see Vaishyas coming at 12 and leaving at 16. That 4 years is kind of the ideal minimum. Less than that, then, you know, it's always going to be less and less that you gain. So, you know. So that's my experience, but yeah.
Yes, no, it's clear.
Okay. But like what you're saying, these things are all very important elements. But yeah. You know, I mean, the ideal is you only run a school that people are qualified to have the Upanayana. You know, they have that potential. And so therefore, them coming at 5 or them coming at whatever age, then, you know, they get, or, you know, when they get second initiation, then, you know, like that. But whatever it is, it's focused on. If you focus on the Brahminical education, then, you know, high grade Kshatriyas and Vaishyas could also, you know, attend for whatever it's worth for however long they can. But everybody else wouldn't be part of the scene because it's not for them. Like run a more simple program that was more obvious what we were doing. But the program we were running for the last 40 years, it's people can, and it's running in there. And very few people have understand all these, because if you deal with, you know, actual high level educators, they appreciate it because they can see all these things are going on, you know. But other than that, then most people can't catch it at all. They can't appreciate it. It's just to them, they can't see. So, well, you know, what's it doing? You're trying to run that thread of what Prabhupada is talking about, the 5 to 25 rabbinical education, to try to create, you know, acharyas. But you allow everybody else to come out of that, because from that pool you get, you know. But a much better approach is, you know, it was explained to me, I think last year by somebody, we were discussing that, why not just teach the essential points and then whoever's attracted, take them. And so then it would be much a much better, I say, experience for everybody, and it's much more obvious. So I mean, before I always prefer, because Prabhupada wanted everybody to be involved in the Gurukul, but you're trying to take it to this. But then now that we're just working with this, then we use the deductive approach. And so only those, we run this program, who's attracted, we only deal with them. We don't go out from there. And so then by doing that, then you get very qualified people, and then people start to notice on that, you know. But otherwise, this throwing the net wide, you get a lot of what do you call it? You know, all those plastic bottles and plastic bags and stuff like that that are floating around. Yes, no.
Yes,
Flossom and Jetson.
Okay. So we'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada.